Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Welcome. You're listening to Now That's What I'm Talking About. Just sit back and relax for the next full hour as my guests and I take you on a dynamic and informative journey. Positive Talk Radio for the 21st century and beyond. Hi, everyone. This is Louisa Vaney, your host for what I think will be one of the most interesting shows I've had in a while. My guest tonight is Tim Link, who accompanied his wife on to an animal communication workshop in Atlanta as part of her birthday present request about, I think it was back in 2004. What he didn't expect was how heightened his own abilities became with his own pets and pets of friends and family. As his gift to communicate with animals grew much stronger, Tim found that he was able to bridge the gap between pets and their human companions. So I've asked Tim to be a guest on my show to share some of his amazing stories and tools for communicating more fully with our furry little friends, or any other creature for that matter. Welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much. I am so fascinated with what you do, Tim. Let's begin by talking about how most pet owners, don't they dialogue with their pets anyway? So what's so different about what you do?
Well, I think the key thing between what I do and what a normal pet owner would do is that our dialogue tends to be one-directional, and we're not getting information back from our pets other than the occasional bark or the little meow or maybe
wagging of the tail.
Exactly. But we're really not getting an answer to that. They're responding to our verbal words, our tones, our prompts that we give them. But we're really not for sure of what they're saying back to us. And so what I try to do is open up a communication line between the animal and their human companion, the owner, and get a better understanding of what really is going on. What are they experiencing, both physical, emotional, mental? What are all the, you know, sometimes it's as simple as they're excited and they want more treats. And other times, there's some serious things going on within them. There's some stagnant energy. There's some medical things that we may be able to uncover early on to allow the owners to get them to the veterinarian to get them checked out so we can catch some of these things early on.
Let's back up a little bit, Tim, and talk about you as a young child. Did you have pets when you were growing up?
Well, I did have pets when I was growing up, but I wasn't your atypical kid where I had, you know, I was always surrounded by pets. You know, I had my dog, which is a German Shepherd Collie mix, and we had him for 15 years. Other than that, I had the occasional, you know, gerbil or fish or something of that sort. But our house was very, very small, and we didn't have really the room or the acreage to be able to be around a lot of animals. So my experience with animals tend to grow more and more as I started to get a little older than when I got out on my own. My wife's a big critter fan. She's I call her my little Ellie Mae Clampett.
Okay. She's really into the critters.
She's really into the critters, and so she continued to open up my heart wider in many ways, including getting to know about all these wonderful animals. And since then, we've had quite a menagerie of animals of our own and animals that we've worked with rescue organizations.
Now, what animals do you have now, Tim?
Well, right now I've got two schnauzers. They're my bubbies. They're brothers from the same litter that we got. They're purebred schnauzers, and we got them from a local rescue organization. They were actually going to be within a day of being euthanized.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
They really rescued them.
We rescued them, and they rescued us because they've just been fabulous fabulous little boys, and we're pleased to have them. But we've got our two schnauzers. We've got four fish tanks, 27 gallons on down to 7 gallons with multiple different types of tropical fish. We've got a small aviarium of 8 finches of different types. And then we've got one aquatic pink turtle, which is his name's Slim, and Slim's part of our family. And
now, is he small? Is that what size turtle would that be?
He is about he's about a 7-inch turtle.
Oh, okay, he's pretty good.
And yep, and he's fairly young, so he'll mature a little bit more. And The interesting thing about turtles, you know, this is our first opportunity to have one in our family. My wife's always wanted one, but we just never have gotten one, and she decided to bring one into the family, and he's been great. But the thing we did, and I want to encourage all the listeners not to do this, is we got the turtle first and then did our research.
Ah.
Yes, and we realized that turtles, aquatic turtles of this type in nature, can live 30 to 50 years.
Really?
Yes. So, you know, the turtle now is a big part of our will and make sure somebody takes care of him just in case we don't stick it out that long.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that later on in the show for sure because we have so many topics to cover. But I wanted to, as you're talking about this, I remember, too, growing up, I actually grew up with a Doberman Pinscher of all breeds, and we called her Princess. And I guess, according to my parents, I learned to walk by pulling myself up in her stubby little tail, and she would absolutely freeze and let the baby do that. And then my father had like 22 tropical fish tanks and everything, so we always had that too, but I never really interacted like you did, and yet I'm fascinated with the larger animals like horses or dolphins or things like that.
Right.
You know, even first-time moms tune in to their newborns, even if they're, you know, they've never had experience before and they anticipate their needs. I believe that's telepathic as well, more than instinct, don't you think?
Very much so. Very much so. You're speaking. Your newborn child or your young child hasn't developed their vocabulary and the outward spoken words like we do right now. So they have to be able to communicate with their parents, with their mother, and that's exactly how they do it. They send out a telepathic words, messages, clues, whatever it may be. And since the mother has such a heart connection with the young child and has that intuition, as we call it. They pick up that information. So they're speaking telepathically, and they don't even fully realize it.
Yeah, because I didn't know. I mean, you see so many commercials, or you can recall, who doesn't recall sitting there and a dog might just, or a cat may come and just sit and look at you like, and they're just looking at you. And it's like, come on, don't you understand what I'm saying? And I guess we haven't been listening. That's part of the problem, isn't it?
That's it. I mean, when we're born with this telepathic capability, and we communicate this way. Unfortunately, by the time we get to be about 5 or 6 years old and we start to develop our language and our
right.
Course, et cetera, that's where it gets taught out of us. And we are taught to speak like you and I are speaking right now.
That's why kids are so good with animals.
That's exactly why kids are so good with animals, because the animals always speak on a telepathic in a telepathic connection. So that's how they know what's going on. That's how when birds are flying in formation, they're speaking telepathically when they want to switch the formation or go into a different direction.
We find that so amazing. I know I like to watch Animal Planet and a bunch of other programs like that. They're my favorites, and as we are studying all the species in our on our planet, I find it fascinating. Of course, we're here again. We're looking for verbal sounds or body language or something, but we never really consider with the big animals that they might be doing, like elephants or giraffes or something, that they're giving telepathic message to one another.
Exactly. I mean, that's how all animals communicate. And if we get ourselves centered and quiet long enough, we can definitely do understand what they're trying to say to us.
Let's talk a little bit, Tim, about the process, because I find it fascinating. While as we're starting to dip in a little bit deeper into this, tell me what it's like to, or how would you teach a class or a seminar? Because I know you do them. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're starting to put on more and more workshops and seminars. We've got one actually coming up here in Atlanta this weekend. And then we're going to be doing them on a every other month basis, and we're looking to take them on the road. So, you know, if someone wants to host one in their particular city, we'll be glad to contact me, and we'll definitely talk about
it. Well, let's give your contact information right now if someone wants to get in touch with you for that, Tim.
Okay, best way to get in touch with me is you can take a look at my website, which is wagging-tells.com.
Great title.
Thank you. And the tells is T-A-L-E-S, because it's all about
the tales.
About the tales that the animals have to tell me. Exactly. So take a look at the website. The email address is timlink@wagging-tales.com and drop me a line. The website's wonderful because it has all the information. It tells you what animal communication is all about. It has some things on energy healing in there. It talks, of course, about my events and workshops and appearances, both public appearances and on TV and radio, and all kinds of helpful hints. There's a whole section on helpful hints on how to what to do and how to help your animals out. So it's good stuff, and you can sign up for my newsletter. I put out a newsletter on a bi-monthly basis and then some periodic updates throughout the month. And it's just good information, good helpful hints, and keeps you abreast of what's going on.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Tim, you've got a book coming out too, don't you?
I do. I do. Thank you. I have a book coming out. It should be about later next month. And the book is Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail. And the book goes into a little bit about how I got started in this, what animal communications is all about. But the bulk of the book deals with stories, tales that the animals have told me. So these are real life situations where I've helped animals out. They've given me stories, basically, and information to give back to their human companions. So we have about 32 stories in there, and then some a couple dozen helpful hints in there as well. So it should be a nice, fun, light book. And there's covers everything in there from the funny things that they do and tell me all the way to some of the tragic things that happen. And
what a great gift to give to someone. So my listeners out there, certainly check that out. Speaking of the animals and listening to the animals, tell me the process, because I would question myself, just like anything else when you get involved with telepathic communication, you question it at first, am I making this up, or where do you get your validation? How do you get your validation?
Well, the key thing is, you know, when we go back to, you know, the workshops and what we do there is a big part of the workshops deal with getting yourself centered. How to get into that quiet time, how to get into your meditation zone, your prayer zone, whatever it may be, the time that you actually can shut it all down and you push out everything around you except for that connection between you and the animal. And that's how we go about doing that. So when you're starting to work with animals, you first got to work within yourself to get yourself centered and open and willing to accept what information you're getting back. And you trust that. It's sort of like when, you know, your intuition, or they call it your gut feeling, and they always say whatever your gut is telling you, go with it, because that's always going to be the right answer. Never doubt it, because when you doubt it, then you stomp your foot and say, oh, darn, I wish it would have went with my first instinct.
Right, exactly.
So that's the same thing we do with animals. We got to get ourselves quiet. We got to get ourselves focused, and then we can open ourselves up to having a conversation with these animals. And the information, you're just giving them, you know, asking them questions. You can do it verbally like I do here, or you just have that connection where you can visualize the animal and you're feeding them questions and they're giving you answers back. And those answers sometimes come in words. Sometimes they come in pictures, feelings, tastes. There's a whole gamut. All your senses, they can tap into and give you information. And as you continue to develop this gift, as you continue to open yourself up to it, you'll start getting information from the animals in all these different manners.
Now, for some of the animals, like something that would fascinate me would be if I were to get involved in something like this, the validation I would need best to work with someone that has a pet that they know the history of the pet, and that way they can challenge you to get the answers, and they can affirm or say, well, you're close but not quite. I mean, somehow in the beginning, I think you'd have to go with some kind of validation about what you're thinking or what you're picking up, yes?
Exactly. Well, and this is for the workshops that I teach. The first part does deal with how to get in that quiet zone, how to get in that meditation, how to get focused and centered on having an open communication. And the latter part is a hands-on work with both pictures and live animals. You have pictures and animals of the people that are participating in the workshops. There's set questions, and we usually start off with some fairly basic questions. And these are questions the human companion, their owner, would know the answers to.
Sure.
And yes, you confirm the information if you're getting it right or if it's slightly off, and then we work with you on trying to get you to open up a little bit further. So if you're seeing something that he likes to sleep on his favorite bed, then you may in your logical mind think, okay, it must be a small doggy bed. In reality, it could be the large family bed, the master's bed. But all you should do is take the information that the animal is giving you and give it back out. Don't try to overanalyze it. Don't try to question, wow, you know, he couldn't possibly be talking about a different bed other than one of these little doggy beds. You're just basically having a conversation, and whatever information you're getting back, you give that answer. You give that reply.
We have to get our minds out of the way because I call it mind editing. You know, what you just said, we second-guess ourselves. We're getting it pure from them, you know, so we just have to take it as it comes in is what you're saying?
Exactly. So there's two things we need to do, and mind editing is a great way to look at it, so we can't overanalyze it. We have to take it for what it is. And the other thing we have to get rid of is our monkey mind, which is all that crazy chatter and all these things that distract us when we're trying to get in our quiet time. We got to get rid of that. So once you get rid of the monkey mind and then you get rid of the mind editing, not to overanalyze what a situation is or not to question it, then you can truly open yourself up to having a conversation with these animals.
So it's more the hazard of the human mind because as far as we know, the animal world doesn't have that same kind of crazy chatter that we have.
No, they don't. I mean, they speak very point-to-point. You know, they have a question. They have something they want to say. They say it. The animals analyze what it is and give a reply back. So, you know, the other thing, you know, the drawback to the human mind is the fact we try to do too much at one time. We're going 1,000 different directions. We're rarely centered and focused on what we're trying to accomplish and what the mission is at hand. And we tend to overanalyze things. We tend to think, you know, well, what would the world think if I said that, or what would they do, or how would that change my life if I did this, that, or the other thing? How would it look if I don't have a nice house and a nice car and a nice job and a nice 2.5
kids? It's like quantum thinking.
Exactly. So we're always concentrating on all these things and usually all at one time. So we're trying to analyze everything at one time, and animals keep it very simple. You know, they have what they want to say, they say it, it gets translated, and they're on their way.
Now, animals, do they like to have routines, or are they kind of like to be spontaneous? What's the deal with animals?
Well, I find that any animal, whether we're talking human animal or whether we're talking the four-legged furry kind, we all like routines. You know, us humans, we like to think, oh, you know, we're spontaneous. We just, if someone called tomorrow and wanted us to go to Paris, we would hop on the plane and go. No, probably not. We would have to think, where are we packing? How would we do this?
Exactly.
How do we do that? You know, no, we're not that spontaneous. If you are a coffee drinker and you've got to have your coffee first thing in the morning and you don't get that cup of coffee, your whole day is shot.
Okay, and animals are like that too.
The animals like that, and you add that tenfold to that. They love their routines. They like knowing what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. And so if that routine or that if the routine or the schedule gets changed or you know it's going to have some sort of interruption, you need to be explaining this to your animals. You need to be explaining what's going on and what's happening and what they can do to help you out with that change and why it's going to be a good thing for them.
Well, you know, that brings up another question. It's actually a good segue. I remember someone saying, oh, animals have no sense of time. And from what I read on your site, you're saying quite the opposite. They very definitely do.
They know exactly what time it is. And I've got two great examples of that. One is we have our two schnauzers that I mentioned earlier. And they have this routine. So their routine every day is, you know, I work late into the night helping people. So my morning doesn't start till 8:30 in the morning. So
okay.
I'm not an early bird. But my boys, as I call them, my schnauzers, they wake me up at 8:30 every morning. I don't have to set an alarm.
Okay, I'm sorry.
8:30 every morning. 11 o'clock is what they call their Kong time, which is the little rubber ball. That
yes, my daughter's golden retriever. I just saw one for the first time. I didn't know what they were.
They are fabulous. And
yeah,
great,
he loves his. Yeah.
Oh, they're wonderful, and they're a wonderful product. And it's actually, it challenges them mentally as well as physically. So Kong treats are fantastic. But 11 o'clock is Kong time. So if I'm busy on the computer or I'm in the middle of something, one of the dogs will come over and they'll pat me on the leg, and I'll look up and it's 11 o'clock. It's not 10:50. It's not 11:30. It's 11 o'clock on the dot.
Something.
And so we have this, and it goes on and on. There's this whole routine that they have, and if it's going to change, if I have say a consultation with a client at 11 o'clock, I'll tell them ahead of time. I'll say, you know, boys, Dad's got to help someone out at 11 o'clock today, so I need you to lay down here and be good boys and be my muse, help me out with my work, and when I'm done, which will be at noon, then we'll have Kong time and I'll give you an extra one, or we'll go out and play afterwards. There's some sort of reward, something that says, here's what it is, here's why I need your help with, and here's why it's going to be a good thing for you. And they do. They lay down, and I don't hear a peep out of them until 12 noon, and then they'll come over and they'll tap me on the leg.
Well, you know, I was sharing with you before we went on air that one of my dear friends was traveling. I just took her to the airport, and she asked me if I'd take care of her cat for a few days. And she goes through the same routine, and she tells her cat exactly how many days she's going to be gone, and Auntie Louise is going to come over and feed you, not to worry, you know. And she goes through the whole thing. And at first, I used to go, okay, well, who's that making feel better, you or the animal? But now hearing you talk, I guess it's an exchange of, just like you would talk to your child or to another person.
Exactly. You know, I've got a sort of cardinal rule, and my helpful hint number one is that our animals go through a great deal of anxiety whenever anything changes, especially when you leave the house. And it doesn't matter if you're going to the mailbox or you're going on a trip or whatever it may be. You need to be letting your animals know where you're going, when you'll be back, and most importantly, what are they to do while you're gone? What is their job to do while you're gone? And if you do these, if you follow this routine and get this as part of your normal conversation with your animals, you'll find out they're a lot less anxious, they'll have a lot less problems while you're gone, there'll be a lot less things that they'll get into while you're gone, they'll be happier when you're back. So it does ease their anxiety, and it goes back to the old thought, the philosophy of, you know, these animals are a big part of our lives, and we need to be treating them accordingly. And so we would never dream of leaving our house and not telling our kids or telling our spouse or our partner where we're going, when we'll be back, and what are they to do while you're gone.
Why do you suppose, Tim, that we form this cooperation, this, dare I say, partnership, if you will, with animals? I mean, we certainly have a fascination, almost an obsession, to interact with other species, and it doesn't always have to be in a form or stance of dominance, but very definitely we're very geared to doing that. Why do you suppose that is?
Yeah, I think it's when you take a look at animals and you take a look at humans, we're all made up of energy. Whether you label it as source energy, God energy, whatever it may be, we're all energy. And so energy attracts energy. So as we develop ourselves and we become positive with things and we open our hearts up and let our energy flow, or let our personalities, our essence, however you want to label it, flow out of us, we want to be sharing that with others. And sometimes that means it's spouses and it's kids and friends, and a lot of times it's animals, because they have the same energy. They have the same heart connection, the love connection.
Yeah, they have feelings and emotions, right.
Feelings, emotions, everything that we experience, they experience. So why not surround yourself with these beautiful creatures and share your love, share your experiences, bring them in as part of your life and your family unit, because it's going to make you happy. It's going to extend your life, because it's going to give you fulfillment, enjoyment. Proven animals ease stress and ease tensions in the household, and they love you unconditionally. So what better way to do it than have them come into your life?
Why do you suppose, here's a funny thing that just crossed my mind, is we focus on so many different kinds of species, the traditional ones, dog, cat, horse, you know, this kind of a thing, but stretching it out into other critters, if you will, or insects or things like that, we don't form that with those species or those entities. I wonder why that is.
Well, you know, funny enough, we are actually, I'm starting to see more and more people opening themselves up to those type of animals. So I actually have clients that have lizards, bearded dragons, turtles. I've known clients to have chickens, wallabies.
What about like butterflies and things like that? I mean, I've talked with butterflies because butterfly signifies so much to me. And I've actually asked one to come over and sit with me, and it did. And I went, that's too crazy, you know?
Exactly. Well, and that's it. If you open yourself up to it and you converse with it, we'll come around. But, yeah, you can converse to butterflies, birds, you name it. And so I think we are, we do have our traditional domestic animals that we've come accustomed to over the years, but I think we're opening ourselves up to a broader range of these animals and these energies, which is really good for us because it does open our horizons a little bit more, and it's good for me because I get the fun of talking to all kinds of animals.
Now, would you be considered what they call the horse whisperer or dog whisperer? Are you definitely whispering what they call whispering to the animals?
Yeah, I've been called a dog, a cat, a horse whisperer. I've been called an interspecies communicator. You know, it's the whole gamut of what I've been called. But the reality, you know, the whole thing behind it is I'm communicating with these animals, and it doesn't matter what the animal is or the energy it puts out, it still speaks telepathically, and that's the information I'm getting. So yeah, being called a dog whisperer or horse whisperer, that's fantastic because it's I am able to communicate with them. I have a great connection with them. It's when I walk into a room, they will amazingly come over and they'll sit down with me. And even I've seen dogs and cats and other animals come up to me that their owners are amazed because they feel that, you know, the dogs are usually, for instance, very playful, very, you can never get them to sit still. And I'll come into a room and they'll lay there with or sit there with me for the whole hour that I'm there.
Well, you know, it's funny, Tim. I'm more of a dog person, if you can say that. I mean, I grew up with dogs, and I was never a big fan of cats. But yeah, I got to tell you, every time someone has a cat, that cat's always coming up to me and sitting on me. And I'm going, that's so strange. You know, they'll sit and look at me, and they'll meow and say something, and I'd love someone to tell me what that means.
Yeah, it's the cat's master plan of converting you.
Oh, is that what it is? I think that's what my daughter claims. She says, the cat just wants you to like it. I said, it's not that I don't. I just don't interact with it, you know?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, I'll give you a funny little tidbit about me and the fact that I'm allergic to cats.
Really?
Yeah, but about, say, 70% of the work I do is with cats. And so whenever I'm doing hands-on work, I just simply take some. Fortunately, I've got it under control where I can just take some over-the-counter medication, and I'm good. But, yeah, I spend a ton of time with cats, and if I wasn't protected, if I hadn't cleared my energies out and put a little bit of over-the-counter stuff in my nose, I would probably be sneezing the whole time. Wouldn't get
that. That would be pleasant at all. Now, you're kind of in horse country, aren't you, where you are? So do you have a lot of horse owners that contact you to find out what's going on with their horse? I know animals can get depressed, so.
Right. Yeah, I do quite a bit of work with horses. Where I'm at, I'm actually in the northern part of Atlanta, closer to the mountainous areas of Atlanta. And though this area is growing quite rapidly, and a lot of the farms have been sold out, sold off for construction and for new homes and retail. But there's still quite a few horse farms around here that I do work with, and I do some things. Obviously, this ability, this gift I have, I don't have to be there in person. I can do it over the phone as well. And so I work with horses in Colorado, Oklahoma. I've worked with some horses in the United Kingdom. So it's far and wide.
Now, how do you tap into their energy, Tim, when you're not in their physical presence? Or I know even I've heard folks that do remote healing, and I think that's probably what you're talking about, or at least reading. And how do you look at a photograph, which is just a flat something? What are you getting from that?
Well, I'm getting energy reading. So in addition to what I do as an animal communicator, I am a Reiki master.
Oh, okay.
Reiki is a form of energy healing, as you mentioned. And so I use that in conjunction with my animal communication to get a feel for what's going on with the animal and opening up that communication with them. And, you know, when you take a look at it, and I mentioned a little bit earlier about how we're all made up of energy, and energy is everywhere. It's in everything, every living thing out there. It has energy. And so once you understand that, once you know how to tap into energy, then it does. Distance has no play in it whatsoever.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so the pictures that I receive when I do a phone consultation, I'll get a picture of the animal ahead of time. It's not totally necessary to have the picture, but it is helpful because I use it as a focus point. I use it as, especially for the picture of the animal with where you see into their eyes, I use that as a connection with them, sort of the eyes or the window of the soul, if you've heard that before.
For sure.
Yeah, so I use that as a connection with them. And so distance really doesn't come into play. And you know, it's really one of these things you have, when you're sitting back here thinking about it, you know, if you can understand that energy is everywhere and we can tap into that energy at any given time, then it's easier to understand. And if you still can't grasp it, then you need to set up a consultation. And once we do that and we actually get information back from your cat that there's no way in the world that I would know ahead of time, or your dog or your
sure.
whatever it may be, then you know that it's flowing freely.
I would also anticipate, Tim, that where energy is transferable, for example, I might not have the tools and the understanding to pick up what's going on with my pet, but as I explain things to you and have dialogue with you, you may be reading my energy that the cat or the dog or the horse or whatever is already kind of overlaid, if you will, onto me, and perhaps you could pick it up through the owner. Is that possible? Or you
yeah, the owner is a big part of it, so I'm picking up information from the owner, and we're, you know, it's a three-way conversation that we're having, and though the owner can't necessarily hear what's coming back from the animal, they are feeling that energy or absorbing that energy and vice versa. So one of the key things, just to give you an idea, is when we talk about this thing called energy, and we talk about there's positive energy and negative energy out there, and your positive energy and your negative energy impacts every living thing around you. So, for instance, if you are in the greatest mood in the world and you walk into your best friend's house and your best friend's house has just had a crappy day, you know, they've stubbed their toe, their kids are bugging them, they lost their job, whatever it may be, well, they're putting out negative energy. And when they do that and you walk into the room, your positive energy has to fight off that negative energy. Otherwise, you get brought down to their level. And all of a sudden, you start feeling like the world's against you.
Exactly.
Yeah, so when we talk about our animals, it's the same way. But they can't communicate back with you, or you're not able to hear them always about what you're doing to them. So if you're in a bad situation, if you're always negative, if you are having more than your share of bad days, they'll take it on. And that's very important when we're talking about physical situations. If you're physically not in a positive place, if you're in a negative place, if you're having a lot of ailments yourself, they will take it on in a lot of cases. And they'll take it on because, one, you're projecting it on them, and or they will actually take it on as sort of a mirror back to you. So, for instance, I've had a case where the animal had transitioned or died at a very early age of a heart disease. And I asked the lady, I said, had your cat always had that? She said, no, he developed it. We caught it, you know, and within a week he had transitioned. And the cat was only 6 years old. And I said, okay. I said, well, I'm still getting a lot of that information back that there's a heart problem. And though the cat transitioned, I'm still getting there's a heart problem. I said, so have you checked yourself out?
Ah, okay. I guess.
And she said, well, funny enough, right after he transitioned, I started developing some heart palpitations, and I went in. And, yeah, I've got some heart blockages.
Interesting.
And I had no idea it was going to, you know, she had no idea that was happening. She never experienced any problems with it. And the cat was actually trying to tell her that, hey, wake up, dummy. There's something going on within yourself.
Well, it's almost like a mirror. It's a reflectiveness of, because we're so connected with them.
We are very connected.
And they with us.
Exactly.
So you're of the mind that animals have souls just as we do.
Definitely. Definitely. They have souls, and, you know, they come into their bodies for, just like we do, for a purpose and a mission. And when they've accomplished that mission, they will transition out of those bodies back into energy, source energy, God energy. And it's the same way that we do it. You know, we come into our bodies for a purpose and a mission. The challenge is that as humans, we get caught up in so much of this monkey mind stuff I mentioned earlier.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, our jobs, our careers, our houses, that we often forget what our mission and purpose is or never find it. And so we spend most of our life trying to figure out what we are supposed to be doing.
What do you think their missions would be? Because we assign such grandiose missions for ourselves. We're going to save the world, or we're going to, you know, come win the Pulitzer Prize or something like that. What types of missions would you say, even though albeit they'll be somewhat simplistic, that animals would have?
Well, they can come into our lives for love, to give us love, to teach us love, what our love's about. They come here, so they come here as teachers often. They'll come here as a sort of a warning signal, like, so I talked about the medical conditions, so they'll come into our lives to actually wake us up and to get us healthy again. Here's a great example. I have a friend of mine who had had went through a divorce, pretty messy divorce, pretty heartbreaking situation. And her friend, as a gift to her, about a month after the divorce, gave her a cat. And this cat was perfectly healthy, perfectly fine. Everything was great for 6 years. So we got the six-year thing coming here again. And about the time the six-year mark came around, she had met another gentleman, actually a real love connection, the person I think she was meant to always be with. And they started dating, and a month before they got married, the cat transitioned. Cat passed on. Cat had not had any health problems at all before this happened. And so it was very clear from having a communication with the cat that the purpose, sole purpose of this cat was to come in during that transition time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Teach her that not everybody's that way. Exactly. You know, not every man's going to hurt her. Teach her that she is loved, that she is worthy and honored, and the time that she found her perfect mate, the mission had been accomplished. The job had been done, and the animal transitioned on.
What happens when animals pass away, Tim?
Well, animals will leave their body. They'll go back into source energy or God energy, and they go through what I call a regeneration process. And this regeneration process is basically to get their energy back up to where it needs to be, where it was before they accepted the body that they came into, and where their body was, or their energy was at when it left the
pure
body.
Positive energy, because we're in a denser environment in reality here. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then once they get their energy fully regenerated, get it back up to where it should be, then they have options. They have options to either stay in that collective energy and, you know, continue to build upon the collective energy, or they can come back into body. And the body can be whatever body that they choose to come back down for another mission. So they could be the same exact mission that they came down the first time for. It could be something totally different. It could be a situation where perhaps the animal's life ended before it could accomplish its mission. So maybe it, you know, got injured or hurt or you know, was in an accident, whatever it may be. And so now they need to regenerate that body, get the energy back, and then get back into body so they can complete that mission.
Tim, let's give out your information again on how people can reach you and your website.
Sure. You can always drop me a line at timlink@wagging-tails, that's TALES.com, and I'll be glad to answer any questions you've got. To learn more about me and what I do and how to set up individual consultations, workshops, seminars, or just to get on the mailing list and then go to the website, which is wagging-tails.com. And that'll give you all the wonderful information. And we're updating that website virtually daily because there's always something new
coming in. Sure,
something new, and we load it full of helpful hints and tidbits and things that help you out. And I'm on a lot of different advisory boards here in Atlanta. I'm on the Atlanta Journal Constitution's advisory board, so I'm involved with other veterinarians and other animal trainers and behaviorists and stuff, so we give you a lot of good advice there as well.
Sounds to me like you need to do a DVD.
I tell you, well, we got a lot going on. We talked about the book, that's coming out. And
yes.
We're doing these workshops and seminars.
Let's give the book's name again.
Yeah, the book's going to be Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail. And it'll be available coming out sometime the first part of August. And it'll be available not only if you go to my website, it'll tell you where it's at. It's going to be on the publisher's website, Amazon.com.
Oh, great.
All the biggies. So you can order it up and take a look at it. Or you can come, you know, have me come to your place for a big workshop and I'll bring
it. There you go. You bring it in. You can get an autographed copy.
There you go.
You know, Tim, it always surprises me when pets run away. I mean, I had a dog for 15 years, and just before she transitioned, she had her one last hurrah. This poor dog could just barely walk, and I was letting her out one day. I was living up on Cape Cod at the time, and I had a nice big backyard. I was letting her out, getting ready to hook her up to her run, and a rabbit ran by her. Well, this dog, this 15-year-old dog, acted like a puppy. Off she went, and we lost her for 5 days. We thought that was the end of her. That was how she was going to transition out. But she came back. Why do they run away?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons. Sometimes they run away for curiosity. and then they take their time coming back. Maybe they like it out there, or they get scared and they can't figure out how to come back, or maybe something's blocking them. So we've had situations where that's happened. Other times their mission's complete and they're ready to go on to either transition, so they know their body is, you know, they're ready to leave their body, so they'll go off to what we say, go off to die, go off to transition. Sometimes their mission's completed with you, and they're ready to go to a different family to try to help them out with the same type of mission.
How interesting.
Yeah. But there's a wonderful little story on my website as well, and it's about a cat in the Bronx, New York, and the City Island area, which is a very where all the boats and marinas are in the Bronx. Now, I've never been there in my life. But I got a call several months back from a lady who said that her cat, who was an indoor cat, never been outside, totally declawed, no collar, no microchip, nothing, had jumped out of the fourth story of their apartment complex. The window was open. She thought it was interesting, so she jumped out the window, landed on her feet, fell four stories, landed on her feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And she took off into the neighborhood, and she wanted me to her human companion, wanted me to see if I could connect with her cat and bring it back home. So I connected with the cat. The cat showed me all the surroundings. We had all kinds of different landmarks of places that were around her house, her apartment, which I have never seen in my life, but it was confirmed that these are actual landmarks, houses, restaurants, waterways, whatever it may be. And but the cat, I could get it close to the apartment, but it wouldn't take the final step to get close enough to come back home. And so we worked on this for about a little over two weeks, daily conversations with this cat, daily interfaces with the human companion. And what finally came about was I picked up that there was another cat in the area. I picked up there was a black cat hanging around the apartment complex. And I had asked the human companion, the owner, I said, is there in fact a black cat? Do you know of one that's hanging around the apartment? She goes, yes, there's a black male feral cat that is unaltered. It's never been neutered. And he hangs around. He bullies all the other cats. And we've been trying to get him for months, and we can't get him. And so, yes, that must be the cat you're talking about. So I said, well, let's do this. I'm going to... there's a wooded area behind your apartment complex. And she said, yes, there is. I said, I want you to set out a humane trap. So this is one of the humane cat or animal traps where you lift the door up, has a little hinge in the
little
bottom.
Little trip,
you
know? Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly, a little trip. You put the food in there, you put up some nice tuna or something really nice and smelly in there for cats. And then you cover it up. And when they go in to get the food, they hit the trip, the door closes, doesn't hurt them, you can release them or you can take them, whatever you need to do from there. And I told her that I said, I will project to this black cat where exactly this trap's going to be. I'm going to tell it has some wonderful smelly food in there for it. It's a safe place. Please go inside and once you can have all that food and then once we're done, we can take you to a safer place. And lo and behold, that night, that black cat got inside of the cage, tripped the trap, ate all the tuna. She took the black cat to get it neutered.
Amazing.
Then she took it to a lady that was out of the way who takes care of feral cats, wild cats. And she nursed it back to health for the couple of days and then kept it around her area and fed it. And then from there, it left it wide open for this lady's kitty cat to come back. So I projected to her that now the black cat's gone. Come back, and your mommy will be waiting for you at the doorsteps the next morning. And that's what she did. And the cat's safe and sound and has never left the house since.
Well, you know, as you're telling that story, I have to share a quick story with you, is that my daughter had several cats, and she ended up having the mother cat had run away when my grandson was about 5. And what they call baby, and they still call her baby, she's now, gosh, she's got to be 12 or something like that. She ran away when they moved to a new house. And she was gone for like 4 months. And it was in the wintertime, and they just figured she was gone. And they had pretty much given up, even though the children were crying, oh, where's baby, kind of thing. Well, don't you think that cat shows up 4 months later, scratching at the door. Of course, the cat was very thin, But it found its way back after 4 months. It survived out there in the quote-unquote wilds of Cape Cod. And there it was, and they took it to the vet and had it checked out. And within days, it fattened right up. And here it is 5 years later, and the cat's still there. You know.
There you go. Yeah, they will. They will do these things, and there's a lot of reasons. I've got a cat that I'm working with right now who happened to get loose. They were moving it to a new house. Excuse me, they were moving into a new house, and when gentleman took the cat crate out, the door came open, the cat ran off. Now, this particular cat's still in and around the neighborhood. There's nothing preventing it from coming back, but it used to be an outside cat, and then it became an indoor cat, and now it's got a taste of the outside again.
Right.
This isn't so bad. I want to stay out here.
Right.
So though that hurts him, you know, he wants his cat back, he has to, you know, appreciate and honor the fact that the cat would prefer to stay out. And so, you know, we have those situations. We've got another one, which is a cat, and it was chased off by coyotes. And the coyotes haven't been around for 9 months. And I've been trying for 9 months to get to come back, and it just will not listen to me at all. It's the coyotes are going to reappear.
We have Garfield on our hands here, mind of its own. Well, you know, that kind of feeds into the cats have nine lives kind of thing. They just keep going like the Energizer Bunny. Why do you think cats more than any species have that ability?
Well, I think that we see our cats, they're
a little more hardy than some of the other species, I think.
Well, I think it's the fact that we sort of, the personality of the cat, we look at it and we think that it sort of does its own thing. It has its mind of its own. It can take care of itself. You know, it doesn't depend on us that much. I think it's somewhat of a misconception. But we do know that cats, just from where I've worked with them, is they, when they do get out and about, there's a lot of reasons they don't come back, and they choose their preference of what they want to do, whether they are in the house or out of the house. And so I think cats, you know, some cats have these natural instincts to survive, and they're a little bit more cautious out there, so they, you know, they protect themselves a little bit better compared to dogs, and which dogs tend to cling closer to us, tend to want to stay home for the most part, and when they do get out and about, they tend to get a little bit more trusting and give humans a little bit, you know, give us a second chance or give us another chance to get close to them. So I think cats instinctively are a little bit more cautious than what dogs are and perhaps other animals are.
You know, Tim, I think one of the things that can be very intimidating is the wild factor of certain breeds of animals. By that I mean even though we may send an animal and all is well, I will not hurt you telepathically, there's no guarantee that they're going to receive it, understand it, or adhere to your non-threatening posture. How do you handle that, not only with around children, but even adults?
Well, the key thing is that, you know, they do hear you and they do understand you, but whether they are receptive to it, that's a different story.
Okay.
And so that's why you've always got to keep all animals, and it really doesn't matter if it's our domestic animals or animals out in the wild, you've got to treat them with respect and honor. So before I have a consultation with any animal, I always ask them, is it okay for us to have a conversation? And I've never been declined that opportunity, but I want to make sure that, hey, I'm not invading their space. I'm not interrupting them when they are wanting to do something else, that I'm honoring them. You know, it's sort of like when we walk into a house, or say we walk into an office, our boss's office. We'll just pick that one for instance.
Okay.
We always ask, hey, do you have a second? Is it okay if we have a chat? We never go in there and just start talking. And if we do, then that person may not be ready or may not be receptive to it or may even be
upset. And we'll know. They'll give us a signal. Mm-hmm.
They'll give us a signal. And our animals will do the same, but we don't always catch that signal because we think that, hey, we're the human. So
well, that's that one-way dialogue that you were talking about.
Exactly.
Not listening.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, so if you, you know, if you don't ask the animal if you can have a chat with them and they give you a little signal and you don't recognize it, believe me, the next signal you get, you'll recognize.
Well, you know, I got to share a quick story with you. I was in Arizona visiting my oldest daughter, and one of my favorite things to do is I love horses, and I just have to pat a horse no matter where I am. If I'm out in the Midwest, I mean, or out in the Southwest, I don't have to go riding, but I have to pat a horse. So we went to this ranch, and most of the horses were being fed. They were just in this big corral. There's probably about 30, 40 horses, and they were too busy eating, so we were just sitting admiring them, watching them like you would a fish tank. And way from the other side of the corral comes this horse loping over, kind of a thing, da-da-da, and he comes over to greet us. And my daughter and I started to laugh, and she said, well, I guess he must be the welcoming committee, and she started making up this dialogue about the other horses saying, okay, Fred, it's your turn. Come on, those humans are over there. Go say hi to them. And it was funny because not one other horse out of the 30 horses came over out of curiosity or whatever, and this horse was way on the other side of the corral and made, you know, was emissary or whatever, came over and let us pat it, and it just was beautiful, and we were admiring it, and then we said, okay, thank you, and off it went.
Perfect. So you had that connection without even knowing it.
Didn't know it.
Yep, and he was the greeter of the bunch.
There you go.
Typically when you have packs or have collectives, they will do that. They'll have a representative. They'll come in. And
that's what we were kidding about, but you're saying that's really the case.
They definitely do.
Isn't that funny?
They definitely have a representative within the group, yeah. I mean, and horses are great. I mean, people will, I mean, they're beautiful to look at. They're so majestic and, you know, but the cool thing about horses, I found out, is they love to talk. They love and you would think that they'd be, you know, kind of outstandish and kind of proud and kind of, I'll talk to you when I want to talk to you. But I've always had great conversations, long conversations with horses. And probably the best story I ever had is my wife's cousin. She owns a small farm up in small horse farm up in northern Alabama. And we went over there during one of the holidays, and she had a horse that was sort of her horse, and never really bonded with any other person other than her. And, I, of course, at this time, I knew the horse's name, but I didn't know which horse it was because I never visited her location. And so we walked out into the pasture, and there were quite a few horses out there, and I was asking each their names. And I turned to my wife's cousin and said, well, which one is this one? And she goes, well, that's Sassy. Sassy won't have anything to do with you because Sassy only, you know, deals with me. And Sassy was a good probably, oh, I don't know, probably 100 feet away or so. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's interesting. So I turned my back, you know, I projected out to Sassy that if you want to have a conversation, you want to come up and see me, let me know. I'll leave you alone for the moment. And I turned my back, and within about 2 minutes, I felt this large horse head laying on my shoulder and breathing into my ear. And as I turned my head to the left, there was Sassy, ready to have a conversation, her whole head resting on my shoulder, and we just stood there for about 5-10 minutes and had a conversation, and I asked her if it was okay if I pet her, and I reached around and I pat her on the head, and needless to say, my wife's cousin was flabbergasted.
Fabulous story.
It was great, and so I honored, just like you did, I honored her. I said, thank you so much. Do you have anything else to say? She didn't, and I said, well, thank you for your time. If you can stay here, or if you want to go, you can go. And she sort of gave me a little last snort and turned away and walked off.
Well, you know, animals in the wild even have been known to have momentary, quote-unquote, connections with man. I recall that scene in, what was it, Dances with Wolves, when Kevin Costner's character shared some pretty amazing encounters with a wild wolf. And I think that is so cool. It's not like they're going to be your best friend or you can make them into a pet, but there's that connection for that moment. Maybe they have curiosity about you. We see that all the time on Animal Planet with whales that are coming up and looking at the boats. They're showing their babies, you know, okay, that's a human or that's a boat, or, you know, of course they probably don't use, you know, the language necessarily, but I know when I first moved here to Sarasota, I went down to the water, and I'm a freak about dolphins just like I am about horses, and I was watching for dolphins, and sure enough there was one feeding and probably about 50 yards offshore. I got so excited. Well, I had asked for it to come in, and I telepathically said to it, I'll meet you halfway. You know, just start coming into me and I'll meet you halfway. Well, don't you think this dolphin, it was a big dolphin, started coming in, and I went out probably chest high, and the dolphin would only come in just so far, but it was probably within maybe 15, 20 feet of me. And I just gauged that it wouldn't be in my best interest to go any further. And I thanked it for coming and said, maybe next time a little closer. But just the fact that I asked for it, I closed my eyes and I said, oh, I'd love to see a dolphin. And he came in, and then I said, meet me halfway. And he came in, and I went out. And I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So you formed that connection. You trusted yourself. You trusted that you could have a telepathic communication with this dolphin, and it worked.
It worked. Fabulous. I'd love to do it again. You know, I'm not sure if it's in my best interest, and this is where I caution, and maybe you would too. I don't know if caution is the right word. I don't know how we would know, other than what you say, a gut feeling, when it is appropriate or in our best interest to get too close. Because they are wild animals.
They are wild animals, and like I said, you have to respect them and honor them for that, and you ask them, and don't invade their space. Let them come to you, and then let them choose if they want to be touched or petted or be near you and at what distance. And that's exactly how you do it. Another great story I had was we went snorkeling in Maui off of Lanai, actually, is where we were at. And sort of in the, not Lanai, excuse me, off of Maui in the Malakini area, which is a volcano that's now sunken into the ocean. And it's fairly well known for green turtles and spinner dolphins and some other wonderful creatures. And this particular day, we didn't know what we were going to encounter, but we went snorkeling and we heard some clicking under the water. And we thought, well, that is definitely a sound of a dolphin. I'm not sure what type, but I'm assuming it's going to be a spinner since it is, indigenous of this area. So I had projected. I said, if you're out there and you want to come closer, I'd be honored if you would swim with me and be near me, come whatever distance that you want to come, and I will appreciate that and honor you for that. And within about 5 minutes, a whole school of spinner dolphins swam at my feet. They were literally right at the bottom of my feet.
What a thrill that must have been for you.
It was incredible. I could see them. I could look under. I could see them. They were swimming around me, and it only lasted for a brief moment, and then they were gone. But
amazing.
It was majestic. It's something I'll never forget. And so I asked them and honored them, said I would be so privileged if you would come here, and by chance they trusted
you. Got that interaction. Kim, we've got about 3 minutes left. I just want to let my listeners know that next week my guest will be radio talk show host Jerry Pippin, who will be sharing some up-to-date stories and information about the latest UFO sightings and controversies. Talking with Jerry is always exciting and informative, so be sure to tune in next Thursday, July 17th. Jerry has been on the show before, so my listeners are very familiar with that. With some closing moments here, Tim, let's give out all your information again, how people can get your book that's coming out next month.
That's right. Yeah, so the best thing to do is visit my website, which is wagging-tales.com, and that gives you all the information about the book that's coming out, the workshops and the seminars, my TV and radio and print appearances, and all the wonderful things that has helpful hints on there that will help you and your animals out. And obviously you can sign up for personal consultations if you want to get a little bit more detailed information about your pet, solving problems that the animal may be experiencing, both medical and physical and emotional. Animals that have transitioned or are about to transition, I do a lot of work there. And then, of course, unfortunately, I do quite a bit of work with lost animals, helping to locate them and hopefully bring them back home. So the website's the best way to do it. You can drop me a line at timlink@wagging-tales as well, and I'll be glad to help you out.
In our closing minute here, Tim, we do have just a minute. Can we talk to our pets even after they've gone?
Yeah, you definitely can. That energy is still there. When they first transition, they'll come back quite frequently just to make sure they left everything okay and that you're doing okay. And then as the years pass and they start working on their own energy, they're still there. All you need to do is get quiet, picture them, ask for their help, ask for them to come back, whatever it may be. And you'll not only see them, you can even hear them, and you'll feel them around you. So definitely they're there. You've got that love connection, so even after it's gone.
And, Tim, we also wanted to just quickly say there's a link that they can go on to call it Species Link. Is that it?
Yeah, there's a wonderful magazine about interspecies communication or animal communication. Publication comes out bi-monthly, and it's called Species Link. It's on my website as well. There's a tab on there called Useful Links, so use that. It has all kinds of foods and supplements as well as magazines and books that I recommend. And I write in Species Link on a regular basis.
Great.
And, they've honored me with that, so we're pleased with that as well. And
well, you're the perfect person to give out that kind of information, especially with your speaking to the animals. Kind of like a modern-day, Dr. Doolittle.
we'll take it. We'll take it. It's just an honor and privilege to be able to help these beautiful creatures and their human companions. And
well, it has been an honor and privilege to have you on the show tonight, Tim, and I wish you all the best and good luck with your book. I'll have to get it myself because I think it would make a fabulous gift. And continue to do your wonderful work with the animals and inter-species communication. And I thank you for being on. Now that's what I'm talking about.
Thank you.
Good night, Tim. Good night, everybody.
Good night.